Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. Hour number two on the way. We'll talk about, I'll go into my rant on Dante Stallworth. Some of you will not be feeling this at all. The least developed country economic model, it must come to an end. RIP, LDC. Taking an internship with a small business and an entrepreneur instead of a Fortune 500 company. I'm going to elaborate on that. We'll take a look at Venezuela and South African economies as well. Let me zone out on you. We'll be right back. Got us a white sniper. Jason Capano. I like that.
But there was no peace. Not in our world, not in our cities. James Baldwin, who came from the ghetto heart of one city, wrote, "Nobody knows my name." And he warned, "God gave Noah the rainbow sign. No water, the fire next time."
Soda, stimulant, ah, it's the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Program. Cedric Muhammad, you are tuned in to the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Can't breathe when I come to, humming to some shoes. Gotta be 20, man, it's not even funny, they can't breathe. The choke hold's too tight, the left looks too right. You know what, you right, these can't breathe. Look, they heart racing, they start chasing bottoms so fast. When I blow past that they can't, in the presence of the man. Your future look better than your past if you're present with the man. You better breathe. Can't share my air, I walk a mile in the pair I wear. And I'm getting better, yeah. Yeah, like they say, wine do. Top couldn't smell me if you brought the chain lines through. And I pinch myself. I know these money hungry wanna chase my wealth, but I keep them on a diet. Embrace they help, or even keep them on the quiet. And space myself, and just take a deep breath. I got them grabbing their chest, cause it's hurting them to see fabbing is best. And laying they worse, they'd rather see me laying a hearse than laying a back. And I ain't just laying a verse, I'm saying the facts. I came back with some sick of stones. I got these broke looking at me like they choking on a chicken bone. Heavy chick up, can't leave stuff alone. So I know it's one of them every time I pick my phone. Breathe.
You are tuned in to the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel. Sober, stimulant. It's the Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. Cedric Muhammad.
The choke hold's too tight, the left looks too right. You know what? You right. Look, they hearts racing, they start chasing. But I'm so fast when I blow past that they can't. In the presence of the man, the future look better than the past. If you present with the man, you better. I see them on the block when I pass. It's looking like they need oxygen masks. I make it hard to breathe, but I keep the in the stashes. Cause the cops wanna lock and harass us and make it hard to breathe. They have to react like having an asthma attack when they see the plasma in back. You dudes are wheezing behind me. My flow is like a coupe breathing at 90. That's the reason they sign me. This slick metaphor, hard punches on the cuts. Feel something like hard punches to the gut. High dress the haters and underestimate us. And ride up on them like they escalators. They shook up and hooked up the respirators. On they last breath talking to investigators. I'm a breath of fresh air and a fresh pair. Face the blue and do it till your face get blue.
You are tuned in to the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel. You are tuned in to the Watchman, Cedric Muhammad, on the Black Coffee Channel.
Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. Yes, I must put Jason Capano back up. Yes, we had to talk about this. Now, we'll get to Africa. look at men, what's going on with Gabon. But my brother from another mother has appeared, Double M from DC. He says, this is Mark, he says, it won't hurt on the offensive side to have Jason Capano, but the downside of a Caucasian sniper is on the defensive end. Question, when does Philadelphia let the young point guard Lewis Williams run the team? Hold on, we're talking, this is 76ers basketball talk right now. Later for the Lakers and Magic, they had their shine. The offseason has begun. The draft is next week, I think. The 76ers have signed a white male three-point shooter, the king of long-distance shooting in 2007 and 2008, I believe. But Mark wants to know about his defensive liabilities. Well, they're definitely there. Any great Caucasian sniper is a poor defender. We know this, and we must accept it. We also must accept that he probably can't create his own shot. He will have to be fed it by a skilled point guard, which brings me to Mark's question. When does the Philadelphia 76ers let the young point guard Lewis Williams run the team? I like Lou Williams. His energy, his occasional outside shot. I don't know about his ability to distribute the ball. I also am concerned about his inability to tell Andre Iguodala and Thaddeus Young no. Any great point guard has to be able to say no to the cats that like to shoot. I don't see that necessarily yet in Lou Williams. But he is talented enough, and he's shown that if you give him an opportunity, he can be explosive. So we'll have to probably stay with him, Mark. But we're going to lose Andre Miller, and that's going to hurt. If Andre Miller was around giving the Caucasian sniper, Jason Capano, the rock, I think you'd see us hitting that second round in the playoffs easily. All right, let me hit something entrepreneurially, then I'm going to get into my position on Dante Stallworth's 30-day sentence. Article in the Financial Times I recommend is called In the Business of Going Solo. Many of you listeners to this program are heavy financial professionals. It's a tough time right now for folks with MBAs, without MBAs. Let me read from this article. It says, when Abhishek Mitra and Chandrani Chakrabarty left their jobs in the Californian information technology industry to return to India, they were looking for an opportunity to set up their own business. Listen up. So just a couple of months after the husband and wife team enrolled on the Indian School of Business, MBA, in April of last year, they decided there was a real opportunity to be had in developing healthy drinks for the Indian market. So they found a product that they believed in. They saw a need. And that's the definition of an entrepreneur, one who perceives an opportunity and builds a business organization to pursue it. So they saw a need for healthy drinks in the Indian market. There was a lack of healthy food and drink on the campus, recalls Ms. Chakrabarty, who points out that fruit-based drinks such as smoothies are a relatively new experience in India. The couple worked on their business plan for 6 months and in December launched Zing, Z-I-N-G, Zing, a range of nutritionally fortified drinks based on fruit and wheatgrass. Now, I like to hear people's ideas. I like that. Zing, a nutritionally fortified drink. I mean, artificially added good things based on fruit and wheatgrass. Love to hear stories like this so far. Although Miss Chakrabarty and Mr. Mitra had always planned to set up their own business, many of their peers at ISB in the class of 2009 and at other top schools around the world are finding that with traditional jobs in banking and management consultancy in short supply this year, working for small entrepreneurial ventures or setting up a company is becoming an increasingly viable option. I am going to repeat that again. For those that insist on looking to the hills and to corporate America, in banking and management consultancy in short supply this year, working for small entrepreneurial ventures or setting up a company is becoming an increasingly viable option. In particular, the opportunity cost of relinquishing a middle manager's salary in order to start a company is far lower than giving up an investment banker's salary. At the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, for example, there is an increased interest among first-year students in working for entrepreneurial companies instead of the traditional corporate internship this year, says Emily Sieri, Managing Director of the Wharton Entrepreneurial Programs. Last year, almost 100 students supplied their details for the resume book to be entrepreneurial interns. Entrepreneurial interns. I love the sound of this, the ring of this. I want to encourage you all to consider that if you are looking to intern. Don't get with a company that's already established and built. Get with a small operation, one employee or more. I get chills when I read this. This year, more than 200 of Wharton's 900 first-year students are actively looking for internships with small companies. Most of that is due to the economy, Ms. Sieri says. Students are looking for other options. This year, the school introduced a bidding system for the aspiring entrepreneurs based on the system students use to select their deferred or preferred elective programs to match students to companies, most of which are technology startups. Elsewhere, the Wharton Small Business Development Center, which provides business assistance to small businesses in the Philadelphia area, has placed 20 interns in local companies for the summer. You want to give a young person, and maybe even a not-so-young person, a good experience, put them in a company where there's not a high management hierarchy or administrative system in place, where people are multi- and triple-tasking. That's how you learn the ins and outs of a business. You send somebody to a corporate America, as I went as an intern, you do nothing but get trained. Get trained into a compartmentalized, tiny little micro piece of the business. Go somewhere where you might have to do everything from type up a memo to clean the restroom. You have to attack the germs in that bathroom. That's right. Nothing wrong with cleaning a bathroom at a small business establishment. So some of us, you know, trained to death. That's a new phrase, trained to death. In Europe, the dominance of small and family-owned businesses means that placing students in smaller companies is more common. At SDA Bocconi in Milan, full-time MBA director Walter Lazzari says some students always return to the family business and a further 10 to 15% embark on entrepreneurial ventures instead of the traditional internship. In Spain, ASADE is working with the local Barcelona government to give students who want to start their business locally the tools to do so. What we're trying to do is get our students to set up innovative businesses, says Camila DeWitt, Director of Career Services. The school is working with the Creopolis Innovation Park to provide space for entrepreneurial students to set up their companies. While venture capital funds are in short supply this year, government backing for new ventures is available, says Kathy Butler, careers director at the Judge Business School at the University of Cambridge. The wider availability of talented potential employees in a recession is a further advantage, she says. At the Judge, at least 10% of this year's graduating class of 150 will set up their own businesses, most in high-tech ventures. Whew. Just wanted to end the business of going solo, Financial Times, Monday, okay? Now, buckle your seatbelts. I want to build, if I can, for a minute on my brother, Dante Stallworth. Let's get into this. Now, as I said before, full disclosure, Philadelphia 76er fan, Dante Stallworth came to us at a time of great need, and I will always be grateful to him for just warming the seat slightly that T.O. had left behind. If you're an Eagles fan, you know Dante Stallworth was a speed demon, could always go deep. He wasn't T.O., but he did a fine job in sometimes making us forget. So that's my first engagement with Dante Stallworth, is as a fan of the Philadelphia Eagles. Well, yesterday, Cleveland Browns wide receiver Dante Stallworth began serving a 30-day jail sentence yesterday for killing a pedestrian while driving drunk in Florida, a punishment made possible by his cooperation with investigators and the fervent wish by the victim's family to put the matter behind them. Stallworth, who was 28, also reached a confidential financial statement with the family of 59-year-old Mario Reyes, a construction worker who was struck and killed early on March 14th by Stallworth driving drunk in his black 2005 Bentley. Stallworth had faced 15 years in prison for his DUI manslaughter conviction after his release from jail. He must serve 2 years of house arrest and spend 8 years on probation. The house arrest provisions will allow him to resume his football career, his attorney said. NFL spokesman Gary Aiello said the league is reviewing the matter for possible disciplinary action. Stallworth could face suspension without pay for some games this year. Leonard Little of the Rams pleaded guilty to involuntary manslaughter after he hit and killed a woman while driving drunk in 1998 and served an 8-game suspension, though the punishment was doled out when the league was a bit more lenient. Stallworth's attorney, Christopher Lyons, said the financial settlement was only one factor in the plea agreement. He noted that Stallworth stopped immediately after the accident, called 911, and submitted to roadside alcohol testing despite spending most of the night drinking at a swanky Miami Beach hotel. He acted like a man, Lyons said. He remained at the scene and he cooperated fully. Stallworth had a blood alcohol level of 0.126 after the crash, well below Florida's 0.08 limit, and Stallworth stopped after the crash and immediately told officers he had hit Reyes. Okay, I like that. I do believe he acted like a man. The lawyer is correct. But family, let's not kid ourselves. If this were you or me, we would not be getting 30 days of house arrest. 30 days of jail, 2 years of house arrest, 8 years probation. Stop it. Now, I know some of the ideologues in the room. Well, he's a brother. It's a black man. And I'm glad that he gets off just like the white ones do. I hear you already. Let me give you some acknowledgement early on in the game. I see you over there in the corner putting the black power fist up because a black man is getting a lenient sentence rather than an undeserved, disproportionately harsh sentence. Okay, enough applause for you. Now, I'm sorry. I can't do the black fist on this one. I can't. Hold on. I'm trying to crumple it up. I'm trying to put the black fist together. I can't. If you can help me close the fist, I can't do the black fist on this one. Now let me elaborate. Certainly black men do not get lenient sentences, but I want justice for all, regardless of creed, class, or color, because I am a humanist, a black universalist. Now, I don't want Dante Stallworth necessarily to go to jail for 15 years. But what I want an end to, what I want to stop, is the lack of accountability and consequences for behavior for sports figures that, to me, enables the mentality that you can do anything that you want to anybody that you want to, when you want to, and because you are an athlete or celebrity, you don't have to suffer the consequences. A sentence like this, to me, while it may be good for Dante Stallworth, it is bad for young men that are in high school and college drinking right now, who can see that all you had to do was get a high-priced lawyer, and that's all this was. Pay off the family, give the family a settlement, show some public remorse, and you don't have to go face what the rest of us would face if we hit somebody while we were drunk. And with all due respect to the comment made, I've never ever heard of a everyday Raheem or everyday Joseph getting a lenient sentence because a family wants something put behind them. I mean, let's just be real. Cut the ideology out. This is your family member who gets hit, or you're a family member of someone like Dante Stallworth. Of course you want him to get leniency. But I can't even get into some of the things that I know. If you are a celebrity, the rules are unbelievably broken and bent. The life of other people is devalued because you can catch a ball, or because you can sing well, or maybe because you have an attractive appearance. I can't bow down to that. And one of the worst things that we have done as a community is lift up the wrong people. So we'll lift up an athlete and try to create a movement around them to receive a lenient sentence. But you have people out here, real victims every day, who never get that kind of support. Now, if I'm following the celebrity family tree, I have to put the professional, I have to say football player, as the most arrogant that I've encountered. I think it's the professional football player, then maybe the basketball player underneath that, and then you come a few notches down and you'll get to the rapper. Maybe the actor and the actress is below the football player. But from the time that you were in elementary school, if you can play football, you are a town hero, you are a child prodigy, you are treated with kid gloves, and you are not taught the law of cause and effect, reward and punishment, except on the field. People will do your schoolwork for you. And this is what I'm saying. Don't put the rapper. I got to straighten some of you all out there who think that rappers are as arrogant as athletes. No. Rappers do not have anybody doing their SATs for them. They do not have anybody doing their homework and turning it in. There's no tutor assigned to any hip-hop artist while they're in high school. Now, if you know of one, let me know. Maybe there's a white rapper coming up who's getting a tutor, and someone's taking their SAT for them. So this happens in all team sports, soccer, baseball, football, basketball, but I've noticed it in football the most. The most arrogant people for a period of time. Now, let me just say this. I'm saying this for a period of time. A football player at his apex is the most arrogant person in entertainment. Anyone beg to differ? Maybe. I don't know about the actors and actresses. They do seem a little kind of out there. I can't do the black fist for Dante Stallworth on this one. So what I'm saying is Dante Stallworth, like many professional athletes, high school, college prodigies, is really a victim. He's told that you can do whatever you want, whenever you want. There's no punishment. You don't have to struggle with your education. We'll get somebody to fix your grades for you. We'll pay you when we're not supposed to pay you. Although I do support college basketball players getting paid. I do support that. I want the NCAA to cut up that March Madness pod. If you're not feeling me, let me know. I have no problem. I just think that this sends... I don't care so much about the message, because maybe it says that a black person should invest more in their legal team. I don't know. But the reality of it is, you become universal, as my friend Rasan, dear childhood friend of mine from the Thoroughborough, you become universal when you become an athlete and entertainer. You no longer are black in the eyes of many, many people for a short period of time. I could go a little further, but, you know, I think some of you all can feel me. 30-day sentence, 2 years house arrest, 8 years probation for killing someone while driving drunk. I can't do the black fist on this one, y'all. I'll give you a little bit of time to get back at me on this. Let's talk about this. Dante Stallworth. What is this really all about? What kind of message does it send to young athletes? Young people in general. Am I wrong with the celebrity arrogance chain? I put football players at the top. And the reason, let me explain why it is that way. It's because, it's partly because of the physicality of it. You're taught that you're stronger, you know, you're bigger than some people. So there's a physical element to the football player, folks like the professional wrestler, that you don't get with a basketball player. A basketball player may be thin and lanky. He ain't going to be, you know, Bogart nobody, unless he packing or he got a posse with him. You feel me? Some good comments coming in.
Cedric Muhammad.
June 17th, 2009, Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. Keep pouring in. Some folks don't agree with me on Dante Stallworth. Let me reintroduce my position. I definitely accept the race angle on this, you know, which is maybe a little unusual for a black man to get a lenient sentence. So I don't want Dante Stallworth in jail longer. I'm glad that he got a reduced sentence. But what I'm saying is, okay, let me turn this around and with gender. Last night, I was watching TV, and I saw the Jonas Brothers. By the way, how big are the Jonas Brothers right now? The Jonas Brothers seem to be like on the new kids on the block tip, almost. If I'm exaggerating, let me know. But let me just try this out for size. For years, we saw women going crazy over male performers, whether it was the Beatles, whether it is a rock star today or a rapper. Women, I don't have to get into the sordid details. The screaming, the crying, the stripping. Why is that acceptable? I saw these young, primarily Caucasian teenagers crying, reaching out like they're begging to kiss and be touched by the Jonas Brothers. Why is that acceptable, like, behavior for a young girl? You want women to be treated with respect and reverence. But you let your young girls, we let our young girls act like, I don't want to use the wrong word, but what is up with that? Why would you let your young child act like that over a celebrity? This gets to my point about Dante Stallworth. Dante Stallworth, I don't have to know him to know that he, for years, has not had to face consequences or accountability for his actions. And no one in the community or the immediate inner circle of Dante Stallworth has been able to reason with him about a problem that he's had for some time. And when I was in Philadelphia, it was discussed that he had a problem and that may have been a factor in his release from the Eagles. So I'm not guessing. So my point is, if you are of the opinion that the fairness argument and the race argument is dominant, what are you going to do as a member of a race that produces professional athletes and puts them on a pedestal, asks nothing of them in the way of accountability, shields them from facing the consequences of their actions? Do you deny that creates this arrogant, self-centered mind state in a very young person, to giving them a reckless attitude, that a self-centered, vain, egotistical attitude, that I'm better than everyone? What shouldn't the Jonas Brothers feel that they're better than anyone if they have young girls crying, stripping for them? I guess, I don't know, I'm just trying to understand the schizophrenic personality that we have. You can say that you, as a woman, want to be respected by men, but then when you see a certain entertainer that you like, you, what is that? Same for men. We as men, we don't We don't want anybody talking to our daughters like we talk to women. Ourselves. That's all I'm saying. Let me get your comments. Dante Stallworth, I don't want him to get a longer sentence. I just want you all to understand that this is exactly what is going on high schools, college campuses, all across America. This does not happen with rappers. So don't compare nobody to no rapper. No rapper is getting free tutoring. No rapper is getting anyone to take the SAT for them. No rapper as a high school student has anyone bailing them out of jail and getting the police department to change their reports. Interesting stuff. Emil Carr from Brooklyn. He wants to thank me for reading the article earlier on entrepreneurship. It's the article right here. In the business of going solo. He says, thank you so much for reading that article. I hope you read it again. My nephew just graduated from Rutgers University with a degree in accounting and is still looking for a job. My advice to him is going to be to look in his hood for entrepreneurs whom he could offer his services to or volunteer to get experience. I want him to think outside the box and create his own. Thank you, brother. Please give me the article source again. It's Emil Carr from Brooklyn. In the business of going solo, Monday, June 15th, Financial Times. Okay? I may read it again. Now, that's a man who has a son who has an accounting degree from Rutgers, RU. Can't find a job right now. He's going to encourage him to seek out the entrepreneurs in the hood, the small business owners who could definitely use an accountant. I love that. He says, I agree with you on the Dante Stallworth issue, but I don't blame him for using the system others have used. Let's be real. You and me would do 15 at least. Enough said. My problem with this is that why is Michael Vick doing more time? Is it because in some circles a dog's life is more important, or is it that the animal lobby jumped off of this one from the get-go and was relentless and still is? Yes, sir. You got it right on both fronts. The animal lobby, PETA and them, are so powerful that they use the imagery of slavery, comparing the slave chattel slavery to the mistreatment of animals. That's how gangster PETA is. And nobody is backing them down. Joseph from Brooklyn. He says, peace, Cedric. I'm tuning in from the start. The show sounds smooth. I'm working on putting up that group on Facebook about the treatment of children in foster care. That's last week's show. We talked about children in foster care being given psychotropic drugs. Joseph from Brooklyn continues. He says, it's in the beginning stages. Me and a friend had lunch and we discussed Dante Stallworth's situation. We agreed and then put Brandon Marshall above him on the short list of NFL players who get away with quote unquote murder. Interesting comment. Joseph from Brooklyn. How are you going to see that? This is why I say I voted for President Obama. I am so happy. I'm so happy. I'm gonna put this hot beat on mute. I am so happy that our young people, young boys and girls, have somebody other than a rapper and an athlete to aspire to. That alone was worth wasting a vote possibly on President Obama. Think, praise God, Allahu Akbar, hallelujah. Hallelujah, praise God. That I don't have to now compete as much or as hard with Lil Wayne, with Randy Moss, with Dwayne Wade. All good brothers, I could say. Beyonce. I now have Michelle Obama. Good. Thank you. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord, for giving us Michelle and Barack Obama, if for no other reason than to teach our young people that athletes and entertainers and celebrities are not God. How about young girls crying over Barack Obama because he's so brilliant and powerful? How about that, rather than crying over young Berg? Who are the young girls crying over today? Shorty Lowe. Lil Wayne. Do girls cry over Jeezy? I don't know if girls cry over Jeezy, but you understand what I'm saying? What's that dude, the group? They used to get on my nerves. B2K? Thank God they're not around. But they're Pretty Ricky. I actually like them. Young, nasty young boys that can sing. Thank God that now there is an alternative. Young boys want to wear suits and speak proper English. And all of you all in support of Ebonics, I feel you, but until you get a school started that teaches Ebonics and then gets people employed because they speak Ebonics, stop it. Stop it. Until Ebonics becomes a language in commerce, I don't want to hear that. So that's my issue with Dante Stallworth's treatment and what it perpetuates. Now let me come clean on my own level, from my own perspective as a manager in the music business. Yes, we got out of Joseph is right, or Amilcar is right. Damn it, we had high-priced lawyers. We got out of trouble legally and illegally. It didn't matter. I had charges dropped. Matter of fact, I don't know if I can speak on this. Let me think how I could. Yes, I was. I don't want to say where I was. I was in somewhere with a group of people. We were all about to get arrested. Maybe I shouldn't say this. The beat is telling me, don't do it. Yeah, don't do it. I'm not going to get into it, but I will confirm that there are two sets of rules as a celebrity. Now, rappers don't have football rules. We got rapper rules. But there is a double standard just the same. Reggie from The Shy says, "Peace, Cedric. A lot of athletes have been catered to their entire life. They are really spoiled." That's the word, Reg. My cousin's husband was a former player in the NFL, and he tells me that it was many grown adults acting like big babies. If it was an average Joe, he would be locked up for a few years. I completely understand your analysis, guidance, and protection. Oh, Joseph from Brooklyn says, I almost forgot. I totally disagree with the stand you're taking on prostitution. I personally feel that if reformed, legalized, or decriminalized, that the world's oldest profession is on the same level as other professions where you use your body to earn a living. I know you're going to get your moral outrage bubbling up, but I will listen intently to your response later in the show. Hold on, family, I want to loop the standing ovation for Joseph. Joseph, may God bless you and your family. May he keep you, protect you, because you are not afraid to speak outside of a ideological construct. Joseph from Brooklyn says that prostitution should be legalized or decriminalized. He was not afraid to say it. Amen. Now, no, I'm not going to get my moral outrage up, Joseph, because I understand some of the arguments for legalizing prostitution, just like I've heard them for legalizing drugs. And I agree with you that you don't just tell people, don't be a prostitute. That was why I asked the question of, how do you think prostitution would be stopped? See, I don't think you can stop prostitution by making it illegal. And Joseph would probably have a lot of evidence to support the view that it has not decreased prostitution. It is probably the same with abortion. I've heard the same thing about legalizing abortion, legalizing prostitution, legalizing marijuana, and legalizing alcohol for similar reasons. The argument is that by prohibiting it, you create an underground economy in it that is more dangerous to the practitioner. And all you all, hold on, don't be getting on Joseph, because Joseph wants to legalize prostitution. A lot of the women out there, you want abortion legalized, and you hit me and others with this argument that if abortion were made illegal, You'd have women taking wires and doing self-abortions, killing themselves and the baby. So how is that, in principle, different than what Joseph's saying, that if prostitution were legal and you could regulate it and you could show, you could ensure, you could unionize the prostitutes, they get better treatment? Is it really that much of a different argument? You feel me? Same with you all people that want to legalize weed. I need somebody out there. This is what I need. Anyone out there that is for the legalization of marijuana or the decriminalization of marijuana, that is not for the legalization of prostitution or the decriminalization of prostitution. Anyone out there that is for legalizing marijuana but not for legalizing prostitution, I want to hear your argument. I suspect something, but I want to hear it. Kevin from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania says, I feel you on the arrogant black athlete, Brother Cedric. However, Dante Stallworth can't be blamed for the time or lack thereof he was sentenced to. However, he did not defend himself in a court of law. He happens to have the resources to manipulate a corrupt justice system. Real applause, Kevin. Very well said. Phil from Ashe, North Carolina, he says, Dante Stallworth and all others must be accountable for their actions, and the system is designed to favor those whom have status and money. Plus, race creeps in every now and then. Phil, Asheville, North Carolina. This is interesting. Again, I'm looking for somebody who's for the decriminalization of marijuana, but not for the decriminalization of prostitution. ML Carr says he's crying over Michelle Obama. All right. I got a lot to cover, but one thing I want to do, because I have not done it, and I've been meaning to do this for 2 weeks, I wanted to acknowledge two giants that we lost earlier this month at the end of May, and I think at the very beginning of June, the end of May, I think around African Liberation Day or Memorial Day weekend. One brother who I had the chance to interact with, and I have high regard for his work and respect, that's Dr. Tajuddin Abdul-Rahim. Tajuddin passed away. I'm going to read, this is so important for me to read this, because once you are quote unquote not allowed to work, and this is what I had made, we did a show on this before about your legacy, what you want people to say about you. There was a brother who was working at HBO, I forget his name, Artie something, and they were crying over him on HBO Sports. I had no idea what the gentleman did. He was the liaison between the fighters, the front office of HBO, the promoters, the behind-the-scenes people at HBO. But the, I won't call it a eulogy, but the way that they spoke of him, it was so impressive. I was deeply touched. Well, it's the same for all of us. All of us is writing a book or writing a testament that we're going to leave behind for others to examine our work and weigh its value and to take or leave whatever they feel is appropriate. What book or what testament are you leaving behind? Have you given it any thought at all? What will people say about you when you're gone? To think like that gives you a purifying effect, I think, and to understand that a lot of the things that you don't appreciate. This is why last week when I talked about my friend, I was asked to give a professional reference for someone seeking a job. It was a young lady, a friend of mine. I could not think of anything negative I could say. As a matter of fact, there was praise that I could not give, because there was no way for me to properly elaborate on how she had built up her personal integrity and her professional competence in the face of her being able to use her enormously attractive self to gain opportunities that she had been passed over for. So I know for a fact she's been qualified for certain opportunities. She hasn't gotten them. But if she had used her beauty, she would be possibly in certain places she wishes she were now, and not getting there on merit. But to me, what mattered, and I was able to share this with her, she was writing a book or testament of her own, her character, and the fact that I and so many other people would say such positive things about this person, that's the legacy you really want to leave behind. So that's the preface for me, talking about a couple men, one that I knew through a mutual friend and through internet contact. The other I never met, but I was touched by his influence. This first brother is Brother Tajuddin. You may remember him from BlackElectorate.com. I interviewed him on the Sudan series. Dr. Tajuddin Abdul Rahim. Many of you in the Pan-Africanist community or in the continent right now, you are familiar with him. One of the preeminent Pan-Africanists who's no longer with us in the physical presence. This article says, Tajuddin's influence was profound. It is said that those we love, the gods love more, and it is also said that we never realize the extent of our love until it is lost. Both sayings are true, as was brought brutally, painfully home to me over the past 2 weeks, first by the loss of the brother of one of my closest friends, and then by the death this past Monday, and this was June 1st, of Dr. Tajuddin Abdul Rahim, probably best known for his role as the Secretary General of the Pan-African Movement. But he had many other roles as well. Kenyans exiled and resident in London through the 1980s knew him as one of their strongest allies in the struggle for democracy, not just in Kenya, but in Ghana and Nigeria, as well as for the struggle for Eritrean independence. I mean, this is what people are saying about him. This is factual. This is what he did. This is the legacy and the contribution that he's made that others are feeling. The outpouring of grief from across the continent and beyond, from Africa's foremost thinkers and from the highest levels of leadership to the most normal of citizens, is, I think, without precedent. There is no other African who was so known by so many from all walks of life in all African states, and this without being a head of state of Nelson Mandela's caliber. This grief is manifesting itself in many ways that will last. Apart from the memorials already conducted in Addis Ababa, Nairobi, Pretoria, and planned for Ghana, Nigeria, Senegal, Sudan, Tanzania, and the United Kingdom, his home state in Nigeria will be naming a school or street in his honor. This is how you get written into history, folks. Now, most of you probably have never heard of Tajuddin. You got to ask yourself why, in light of what I just said about athletes. For he was such an extraordinary person. Big in body, laughter, and voice, he could be heard coming a mile away. Big in engagement with all things African, big in spirit in terms of his embrace of any African concerned about the continent. Now, I know I personally experienced that because whenever I had an email or a question or something that I wanted to discuss, Tajuddin was available. I have kept the emails, my exchanges with Tajuddin, I have kept them. Now, this writer says, I met him first a decade and a half ago at a conference in Arusha, ostensibly convened to discuss the Rwandan refugee crisis in the region only a year after the genocide, but more importantly to address the politics around humanitarian aid in the Rwandan refugee camps, in which it was already clear the Interahamwe had taken control, effectively preventing the Rwandan Patriotic Front from demobilizing them. But beyond the angry debates aimed at shifting the key international humanitarian actors in the region, there was the side of Tajuddin that anybody and everybody he drew into his ambit knows so well. The evenings filled with food and laughter, as well as the inevitable arguments about African politics, the dissections of the players therein, and all of their relationships. From him, over the years, I learned a huge amount about Africa and its movers and shakers, and through him, I met many of them with his benediction, as so many of us found doors swung open, not just politically and professionally, but personally. That's another thing about Tajuddin. I was able to meet another researcher through him, and I owe the experience to Mark Milley, my brother from another mother who's good friends. Introduced me to Tajuddin. I didn't even know about him until Mark put me up on him. But that's another thing. There's a lot of envious and jealous people who will not open the doors to others to you. I've experienced this. You all have experienced this. People that really don't want you meeting other people. That was the exact opposite of how Tajuddin was. He approached organizing in a very personal way while he was still based in Kampala, only leaving when he finally disagreed with Yoweri Museveni over the latter's third term. I never needed to tell him that I was there. He would either be involved in whatever I was there for or hear that I was there and simply appear, sweeping me and anybody else he could find away for fish or meat and another of those long evenings at which always there were other Africans from whom could be heard directly what was happening in their own countries. He had just had on Saturday night a similar evening at his house here. And then Monday morning came a telephone call at about 6 a.m. He was gone. He was an extraordinary African who would no doubt have laughed at the fact he died on Africa Liberation Day were it not for his wife and the two daughters he left behind, whom we will do everything we can to take care of so that he can rest in peace. Rest in peace, Dr. Tajuddin Abdul Rahim. One more time, that last sentence. Whom we will do everything we can to take care of. That's referring to the wife and the two daughters he left behind so that he can rest in peace. Rest in peace, Dr. Tajuddin Abdul Rahim. That's why I'm not impressed with a lot of us that cry crocodile tears. You won't even look after the family of somebody who's died or sacrificed their whole life. I'll get to the other great notable, but if you had an experience, if you knew Tajuddin, you have any memories or you encountered any of his work. I never had the chance to meet him physically, only through email correspondence through my friend Mark Mealy, but I was so impressed. And just a Pan-Africanist, man. Didn't get caught up too much on the team level, but just anyone who loved Africa, who was concerned or interested about Africa, or who was an African, Dr. Tajuddin Abdul Rahim treated you like family. June 17th, 2009, Cedric Muhammad Black Coffee Program. We've got that Obama interview yesterday. I think I'll play that whole thing. Next hour, we will get into this whole idea of something actually Tajuddin dealt with in many different, from many different angles, this whole concept of African economic development. And really, it's not just African economic development, the development of any country coming up out of a post-colonial imperialist experience. What phases do you have to go through? What realities do you have to contend with? I want to lay out a framework that I hope will shed some light on the least developed country, what it is, why they can't get out of the grip of foreign aid, debt, multilateral institutions that want to control them. It's quite a maze that you have to work yourself out of